This is News in No Time, Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, OJ says it's just not fair, and GM cutting again. In our New York Bureau, Michael Myers joins us. He's the executive director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition. George Curry, editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service, joins us today from Maryland. And joining us from our headquarters in Washington, D.C., Julianne Malvo, economist and author. Folks, thanks very much for joining us today. Before we get into those topics, I wanted to talk a little bit about what we just heard from Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, a very impressive woman, defeated an immensely popular figure there, George Weah, in Liberia. Many call him Liberia's Michael Jordan, if you will, his popularity along those lines. Julianne, when you hear from this woman and look at the optimism she's showing, we also have to be realistic about the foundation that many of these countries on that continent face in terms of the turmoil that they've seen over the course of decades, often through civil war, and the idea that you've got to shore up the economy and infrastructure and all. She faces a daunting task nonetheless.
She absolutely does, but she's one, I think, who's equal to the task. You compare her opponent to Michael Jordan. Well, much as I like Michael Jordan, I don't want him to run the country. And I think that from that perspective, the Liberian people looked at someone who's very capable, with a strong financial background, who's done the kind of work that would allow relationships with people like the World Bank and the IMF. This is an opportunity, Ed, for there to be another turnaround country in West Africa. There are a few, like Ghana, that post growth rates of over 5% a year, which, you know, clearly is better than the United States growth rate, but that's another story, but rivals that of, you know, some of the Asian countries in their early stages of their development. And if she can get her a hand on both the infrastructure issues, and she mentioned repatriation, which is also something very important, something that Ghanaians have talked about. Ghanaians have also offered the opportunity of dual citizenship to people in the United States. And if Liberia were willing to do that as well, I think that she might attract a cadre of people who could turn this country around. The international community, though, is probably the most important factor there, and that's why her qualifications are so important. What will the World Bank and the IMF do if this woman is able to come in and basically deal with some of the infrastructure issues?
And I understand that there's much glee and jubilation over the fact that she's a woman and be the first on the continent, and there's a lot of it, but I'm not so sure that a greater factor was her qualification. I mean, you basically took a technocrat and picked him over a populist, and she's eminently qualified, and I just think that even more so than agenda, although that's an important one, that she is just eminently qualified and certainly the person to lead the country. Now, Julian touched on it. I mean, there's still a lot of serious problems. You know, they have no running water in the capital, no sewage system, no public electricity. I mean, unemployment is about 85%, so there are some real problems, and they will certainly need the help of the international community.
And Michael Myers, one of the things we should note is she, and we touched on it briefly in the interview, has been thankful for the support that she's seen from the Bush administration so far. But you will have to assume that you will need continued support outside of the initial entree to the presidency of this woman to further grow the needs of Liberia.
Oh, absolutely. But first, we have to make sure that she has the support of her nation. She has not yet been declared the victor. And we do know something about fraud in elections. So I guess she's taking a page from the American history of election fraud, and that is declare victory and take your seat. But I would say that I suppose it's progress for Liberia to have a Harvard-trained technocrat as its president, particularly after decades of civil war. Whether it's a populist or a technocrat, we can wish the country well.
Woman has not claimed victory, for the record. She's waiting for the commission, as everyone else is, and no one is claiming victory. I think that she's been very measured about all of this. She did have the majority vote. There have been claims of fraud. There is an election commission.
Wait,
but let's not liken her to a George W. Bush, who claimed victory when he didn't have
it. I didn't mention George W. Bush.
Well, don't worry about it.
59% of the vote she received, and on Wednesday it should become official, barring any unforeseen issues at this point. All right, General Motors announced today that they are going to cut 30,000 manufacturing jobs and close a number of plants, including possibly four or five in North America. All of this will take place in totality by 2008. Julianne Malveau, again, let me lead with you. Put your economist hat on. When you see this from the American giant, this cannot bode well, not only for the automobile industry as they try to get lean and mean and fight the foreign competition, but the idea that General Motors is one of those companies that has been the foundation for the American economy for years.
And not only the foundation of the American economy, but as a Detroit native, as you well know, probably a leader in ensuring some African-American working class / middle class prosperity. You look at the auto industry and you see the number of African-Americans who've done very well without college degrees because they've been able to chalk in the overtime, get the six-figure salaries, you know, working in manufacturing. What we're learning here is that the American manufacturing model cannot work in a global economy. At this time, competitively, we've rushed into globalization without looking at what it meant for our own fundamentals. And so we end up with a situation where some of our bread and butter companies are having major economic problems. GM is not the only one, but certainly the number of jobs that they're cutting by attrition, 25,000, is extraordinarily significant. In addition to the fact that they may have some pension liability with Delphi, because that was a spinoff company. So we look at those things, it really does force us to look back at our basic economic model, which is something we simply have not done. We assume that free markets are going to take care of all this for us, and they will in the long run. In the medium and short runs, we need to do more of what other countries do around issues of economic planning.
Well, when you
and on top of the 25,000 cuts, let's not forget they've already closed three other plants earlier. They've closed one in Lansing, Linden, New Jersey, and Baltimore. So, you know, we really put this in perspective. You know, you're talking about a country that's lost nearly $4 billion this year. And I can't help but think that people are going to really at some point, I think Wall Street, when they're really demanding profits, they're going to say you're going to have to look at GMAC, its financial arm, say, look, you know, you account for about 80% of the profits anyway. You got to sell part of that or all of that because in the end, they want those dividends.
Well, given the grim situation at General Motors, it seems to me that cutting 25,000 jobs by the year 2008 is not as drastic as the situation could be. General Motors, given its older workforce, the high pension costs, the cost of unionized labor, and the cuts in jobs, they could just cut and run. They could have declared bankruptcy. Now, the CEO of General Motors says that's not going to happen. So that's good news. That's the silver lining in this cloud. But this is not the first time that U.S. auto companies have fallen into this kind of disrepair, to use the word. Just the law of supply and demand. They kept building these big cars, gas guzzlers, and they didn't follow the trend. They didn't follow their own best advice. So they're in a real stall here, and I hate to say it, but a lot of people are going to be hurting for it. It's mismanagement.
All right. The CDC released numbers that said that the rate of new HIV cases reported among blacks has, in fact, been dropping. Exciting as this news is, we should note that we've seen a 5% drop a year since 2001. We should still underline and underscore the idea that blacks still are eight times more likely than whites to be diagnosed with the AIDS virus. And it is still very prevalent in the African-American community. Julianne, when you see these numbers, is this a little bit of the, yes, we're leading with her again, a little bit of the silver lining that can be seen in a tumultuous storm? Or should we really be encouraged by this?
I don't think we should be encouraged at all, Ed. I'm very, very concerned. The data that the CDC put out gave us sex and race and age breaks, but did not do the race-age break. Just a year ago, there was a major report that showed an increase in the HIV infection among black male college students in North Carolina. In North Carolina, there were 73 new AIDS cases, and 84 cases, 73 of them were black men. And they were basically this down low behavior. You know, because the CDC only collects for 33 states, we don't have all the information, but that particular report said, we wonder, it's using the same data that we've just reported on, the 2001 to 2004 data, and they were saying they were wondering if they would see this in other parts of the country. And, you know, sort of the anecdotal stuff suggests that we are. So while you see a decline, I suspect that that's among older people. I know that there is a bit of a decline among women. This young people and AIDS is something that we, you know, December 1 is World AIDS Day. We've got to get our hands around. And this particular piece of information, which is quite alarming, is something that really raises questions about the future of Black America.
We should note that 69% of heterosexuals diagnosed with HIV were, in fact, Black.
Well, this is my view, Ed, Michael Myers. I think that with respect to HIV infection, the stats are really hidden. You're talking about people who have been diagnosed already, people who have access to the healthcare system. I think we've got to recognize that Puritanism in America is dysfunctional. This is not an original thought, but hey, let's face it, sex is dirty if you're doing it right. So I propose a national campaign of sanity to stop HIV infection. We ought to have vats of condoms in schools and hospitals and prisons and churches, wherever people gather. And the slogan should be, over those vats of condoms, don't ask, take some. And we also have to have more education and more activity around needles and make sure that people understand that needle pricks are that for a reason. They're called needle pricks. So I think we've got to create more education around how to prevent the spread of AIDS and HIV infection.
Never thought Michael Myers would be how condoms and needles are, but I guess that's what God for him. Listen,
stop
I was out at
the
Black AIDS Institute last week when these numbers came out, and we actually talked to some people at CDC. What's important to remember is we're still talking about 43% of the people living with AIDS in this country are African American. If you're talking about children, you're talking about 60% of them. And they said that they're going to target men having sex with other men because they did, I think, a survey about five cities. And when they actually did that, they found that 46% of the men were infected with HIV. And even more troubling, 67%, two-thirds, didn't even know it. And so that's the problem, particularly when you're talking about African Americans. We don't know our status. And it's because once we know our status, we can do something about it. You don't have to die like people used to do in the past, but we got to know our status. So we really got to have, and I hope Michael does it when he becomes the czar, expand this testing so we can know our status.
Well, we'll look more at this issue come the 1st of December, as Julianne noted, December 1 being World AIDS Day. Let's quickly go to the issue of O.J. Simpson suggesting, based on an interview he did recently, and he was asked about the Robert Blake case, O.J. brings up something that a lot of people, quite frankly, have suggested. And this is a quote from O.J. He is talking about the idea of double jeopardy. He says, I still don't get how anyone can be found not guilty of a murder and then be found responsible for it in any way, shape, or form. He said that during a phone interview recently. He wants to talk about the idea of double jeopardy. Now, Michael Myers, we understand the preponderance of evidence is lower during a civil trial, but there are a lot of people who suggest once you're found not guilty for murder in a criminal trial, you should be left alone.
Well, you can't judge things by what a lot of people think. A lot of people are just ignorant. They're ignorant of the law, they're ignorant of standards of justice. A lot of people don't understand how O.J. Simpson got off. So, if O.J. Simpson's going to talk about what a lot of people think, with respect to what O.J. Simpson thinks, the guy is bizarre. He has gotten off. There is no double jeopardy. He is not at risk of his freedom anymore.
The man was acquitted in a court of law, Michael.
Excuse me. The issue is, in a criminal trial, the standard is beyond reasonable doubt. In a civil trial, which is questions of damages, not in terms of your freedom, the issue is, can you prove this person did something, an act, a wrongful act, by a preponderance of the evidence? So they didn't get him on a criminal trial, but they did get him in the civil trial, and he still hasn't paid up because he presumes he doesn't have any money. And he does understand pensions that are kept away from court judgments. He understands that part of the law, interestingly
enough.
George,
take O.J. Simpson out of the equation. There's still a lot of people, in spite of what Michael Myers suggests, that believe that this is inappropriate.
Well, I just think people don't understand the law. There's a difference between criminal law and charges and civil charges. I mean, that's the separation. I mean, if you know, criminal, you will go and do some time, and that's you committed a crime. Civil is you actually cause some financial injury to somebody. So that's the way our system is set up. It's not double jeopardy. It's just two different forms that you can be tried in.
All right, Julianne. Let me come to you, Julianne. Let me ask you this. Obviously, it's not double jeopardy in terms of the legal definition of it, but the layperson, I'm going to go back to this same question. There are lay people who just say, while the law being the law can sometimes be wrong. Is there room to say that this is wrong? How about that?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't pay OJ too much mind, although he was acquitted. But I would say this. We've seen ways that the various court systems, civil, criminal, federal, state, are used to reinforce that which is perceived to be wrong. We've seen it in civil rights trials, and we've seen it in other trials. So it's a little premature for us to start saying, oh, we don't like this. Let's look carefully at whether or not we think we're talking about double jeopardy or we're talking about different standards of proof. You know that in civil rights trials, we've seen people tried, you know, acquitted by racist juries, but then, you know, reinvestigated and found guilty on federal charges. So that's not necessarily double jeopardy. And we may want to be very careful before we throw this technique out the window.
Well, the Supreme Court has said with respect to federal prosecutions on civil rights grounds, when you deprive someone of their civil rights because of their race, et cetera, the Supreme Court has said that the federal government, which is a separate sovereignty, the federal government may prosecute independent of what the state does. So if the state prosecutes you for murder and you get off, the federal government, if there's a civil rights violation in its judgment, can prosecute you without being called double jeopardy.
Precisely, and it's a parallel with the same thing. It's a very strong parallel, and I'm just suggesting that, you know, people pay attention to O.J. Simpson because he was acquitted and because there was a fair amount of racism involved in his trial. That's why he got off Michael Myers. No. Yeah, it was. Anytime you have
Michael Myers, let me remind you that if we lock folks up for being bizarre, it'd be a whole lot of folks locked
Michael
up.
Michael will be the first
Michael
one in
Myers,
line.
George Curry, I wasn't going to say that. George Curry and Julianne Melville, thank you so much. Thank you for joining us. Greatly appreciate it.